front-end developer for the first time in my career.
User experience design.
I'm a back-end developer. I mainly work with Drupal.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Screens, where we go beyond the code and into the community. I'm your host, Chris Albrecht. Let's dive in. Behind the Screens is made possible by Lullabot. Lullabot is a strategy, design, and development company where we turn great content into captivating user experiences. Find us on Twitter at Lullabot or in your browser at lullabot.com. We'd love to meet you. On this episode of Behind the Screens, I am talking with Nate Lampton. Hi, Nate.
Hey.
So you are now back at Lullabot as a full-time employee again after taking a little bit of a sabbatical for... not a sabbatical. We'll call it a little break to work on some other projects. So tell us all a little bit about how long you've been with Lullabot. You're one of the first Lullabots.
Mm-hmm.
How everything's been going.
Yep. I think I'm going on 12 years now at Lullabot, which is pretty much the history of the entire company. like you say, I came back to do more full-time work. I tapered off doing some work directly at Lullabot to pursue webform.com, which might be looking at winding that project down here in the future. But for now, it continues to exist and be run as a service. But that was an effort that I put forward, and I think we did a pretty good job, but it got derailed. got derailed by Drupal 8, of all things, just because the amount of work that I saw coming down the pipe transitioning into Drupal 8, it would basically be rebuilding the entire site all over again. So I got a little demoralized by the future that I saw approaching for webform.com, and that actually ended up transitioning into, of course, the Drupal fork backdrop. So now my energy's being spent on backdrop. You know, I find that is a more... it's something that's more aspirational for me to make happen, and it's just something that's thus far been more successful than my attempts at forming a services-based product around WebForm. So, all of that time off or part-time work basically allowed me to attempt to do something that maybe didn't pan out, but that's fine. I pivoted it into something else that I'm really getting a lot of enjoyment out of, and so it continues to be rolling that way even now that I'm back working full time. We still have some opportunity to contribute time and effort into backdrop, but without that transitional time, I wouldn't have been able to do either thing. So I don't regret that at all.
No, you definitely have not been. You've been keeping busy, we'll say. And so webform.com, not to be confused with the webform module for Drupal, although it's based on the webform.com is based on the module. Webform.com is a service that you could add to your website to have interactive web forms.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, exactly. It was webform, the module as a service, and you could embed the web forms onto your own site, or you could just send them out as links in like mailing campaigns like you might with the SurveyMonkey survey, for example. And the value add there that I thought would be unique would be there's no lock-in whatsoever. Like, not only is the data yours, you can actually like export all of it and get it onto, you know, your own instance of WebForm. And there's even tools to do a full export and then import into your self-hosted version of it. So it was kind of like the ultimate open source data store, that not only did you own the data, you actually literally could export the data and then set it back up again in a self-hosted version.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty cool. Still is pretty cool, and it still works to fulfill all of those things. But the form space is highly competitive, and Google got into the space, and a lot of people just use Google Forms now and saves them into spreadsheets. Some other competitors that are out there have also just really shaped up really nicely. At the time that I started it, WooFoo had been bought by SurveyMonkey, and then they basically let it die. WooFoo's still around, but the development on it hasn't been very inspirational for a long time. But other new competitors came up, and I'm just looking at it now going, yeah, they're doing this better than I can with the resources I have. So I think that it's time to just say, that was a nice shot. But
Yeah, fun while it lasted, but... other more pressing things to point your attention towards.
Yep.
And so the web form module has been taken over by Jacob Rockowitz now.
Uh-huh.
When Drupal 8 came around, he started with YAML forms, I think it was called, and then,
YAML forms, YAML that's forms. Right.
Yeah, and then it made sense. He approached you and took over the namespace for web form module. So he's running with web form now on
Drupal 8. Yeah, actually, it wasn't actually Jacob that wanted to do the name web form. It was, I can't remember exactly who in the community it was that made the suggestion. There's just that, like, YAML forms basically was turning into cover like 100% of the functionality in web form module. And somebody just was like, this doesn't really make sense. Like, the Drupal 8 port of web form has been started and then failed by a number of different attempts. Meanwhile, Jacob was over there making YAML forms and replicating basically all of web form. And we came together kind of as a community and had a discussion about, like, you know, why not just call YAML forms web form? Like, rename the module, because there's no point in porting web form to Drupal 8 if YAML forms already does like 90% of the functionality. And actually, was explicitly going through every feature of web form and making an issue to match that feature parity. So it was very clear that it was trying to fill the same need that web form provided previously. You know, why not just change the name of the module to web form and then provide a migration path eventually, and then get, you know, that same namespace and some continuity for people that are upgrading. So I think that was a great compromise, basically, because I wasn't interested in making a Drupal 8 version of web form, and Jacob had basically already done it. And now it's highly contentious, some of the things that have been going on in the Drupal 8 version of web form, but I am just like, go for it, man. Like, Jacob came in and did something nobody else could do, and his attempts to make web form sustainable through various attempts, you know, like whether it's the dependency on contribute module that funds money into the DA, or the kind of like built-in like relevant services that can be integrated with web form and basically providing built-in integrations and in some ways like kind of suggesting that people use these services. I think all of those things are like great. Like, he's doing things that solve problems around sustainability that nobody's really been able to figure out in the Drupal community, including myself. And webform.com was an attempt at that same, solving that same problem. Like, how do we make open source development sustainable? And my hat's off to the efforts that he's put forward in making web form for Drupal 8, and also his attempts at making that sustainable from here on out.
Yeah. So what projects have you been working on for Lullabot lately?
We just finished up the Grammys this past weekend. We had the Grammys, and Lullabot built out this homepage feature called Backstage that would take a JSON feed that had a really short cache lifetime, so editors could publish out changes to content and even flag the winners of the Grammy Awards. They would get saved into this JSON feed that had like a 5-second cache lifetime, and so from the time that the winner was announced on television to when it showed up on the website without reloading or anything like that, it would be about 12 to 15 seconds, which was really great. We actually had this hilarious thing where the live streams that we were having, the live streams actually had a longer delay than the Ajax-based display that we had of the leaders. So it actually was showing the leaders or the winners faster in our interface that was in Drupal than it would in the live stream that was right next to it. And so it actually was a little bit of a problem, because some things, like, you would see the awards being handed out and the leaderboard would tell you who won before you would be able to see it. We hadn't expected that. That these are the sorts of things that you learn, I guess, during live events that you couldn't have foreseen very easily. But it was fantastic, just that the technology stack that we built out, it was a React app on the front end, and it basically was a React app that was self-contained, all just within one Drupal block. We had a module that had a React app inside of it, and we would compile down the CSS and JavaScript into a single file, and then just embed that file, you know, attach it to the block with pound attached, and we basically had React in a block, and it was highly dynamic and pulling from some JSON feeds that were Drupal menu callbacks, and it was like this, you know, neat combination of like a new front end system like React, and like, you know, just standard Drupal data structures on the back end. And we didn't do anything fancy for those feeds. We just had a custom Drupal menu callback, some SQL queries, and assembled all of this data. We needed it to be fast, of course, so we avoided any entity loading and anything like that, and just literally one select with, like, you know, 12 joins, and then we would pull out, like, you know, the list of all of the nominees and who won, or the list of all content that was being published, and narrowed that down into like a really tight JSON data structure, and then fed that to the React front end, and it was a really great winning combination, and it totally just like killed it on show night. It was fantastic.
That's awesome. So how close were we to spoiling all of the Grammys?
Well, it only mattered for the live stream of the awards that, like, they only give out like a dozen awards during the CBS broadcast, and that's what most people think of the Grammys.
Uh-huh.
But there's like 70 other awards that are handed out throughout the course of the day prior to that, and that was where that discrepancy was kind of more important. So I don't know if we've really spoiled it or not. It just kind of removed some of the excitement from watching the live stream, which was unintentional.
Yeah.
But ultimately, most people don't look at those Grammys until after the CBS broadcast is over. They like check like who won everything all at once at the end of the show. So it wasn't very much different than usual, I don't think.
Sure. That's pretty impressive, though, that Drupal was able to keep up through all that, and it's with the volume that goes through the Grammys website during the award ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done the Grammys a number of years before, and we've done excellent at it.
Yeah. In previous years, Lullabot had more central role. This year, we were just doing one very specific thing, and other teams were responsible for the remainder of the website. And they did excellent this year, and there were no caching problems or anything that came in that we didn't have adequately set up to have a cache lifetime, because Varnish takes almost all of the hit, and then we have CDN in front of that, Akamai, that absorbs most of the actual bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things worked great. And then Backstage, which was the new thing that we put on the homepage, that had this, like, as you were sitting there, new content was being pushed to you without reloading the page. That was only tricky in the aspect that we needed to publish our content super fast. And we did that through this just short TTL on those JSON files. And it was a little bit strange to have like a, you know, page that only had a 5-second cache on it. But 5-second cache can give you tremendous benefit over no cache.
Oh, yeah.
Which would have just been catastrophic. It's just even a really short lifetime can just be the huge, huge saver for Drupal or whatever your origin software is.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's going on with Backdrop these days? How are things going with that project?
Things are great, actually. Our community is growing. We just released Backdrop 1.9. It's kind of interesting. We're at this pivotal point where we need to decide what happens after 1.9, because, you know, historically, people might think that 2.0 comes after 1.9, you know, just because it rolls over, and that's actually what WordPress does as well. But the upgrade process, that people are moving like off of Drupal 7 at kind of a much slower pace than we had anticipated. Both, I'm sure the Drupal community feels that as well, but the Backdrop community also is responding to how quickly people are moving off of Drupal 7, because we want to be the alternative that you can continue basically using a Drupal 7 like stack that's much better and improved and updated by pointing a new installation of Backdrop at your Drupal 7 database and then running update.php, and it just upgrades all your content just like Backdrop is the next version of Drupal. But we decided that we weren't ready to give up the backwards compatibility with Drupal yet, because so many people haven't even gotten off of Drupal 7. It's way too soon for us to remove our compatibility with all of these Drupal modules, which, to be clear, Backdrop isn't compatible with Drupal modules. You still have to port them, but it's like a really simple, like a 30-minute process for most modules. But going to 2.0 would indicate that we would drop our backwards compatibility layers.
Gotcha.
And there's just no point in doing that yet. So the next version will be 1.10, and we'll just kind of continue rolling, making iterative improvements to Backdrop. And it's you know, it just gets better. Every 4 months we have a release, and it's just getting better and better every single one of them. I mean, it's been 3 years now since Backdrop 1.0 came out. Because you know we're at 1.9, so three releases a year. You know,
you go.
3 years. So, it's just crazy. Like, it, looking back on where we were when Backdrop 1.0 came out and where we are now, like, it's just a really excellent set of improvements that we have, and they just keep coming in, just like month after month, like great new stuff. Really makes it seem like the Drupal 7 era, where we were locked into this thing that wasn't changing. It's just a really, like, brutal time in our Drupal history. I mean, it's funny because it was like the heyday of Drupal, and maybe that we'll never really approach the number of sites that were running Drupal as we did during the Drupal 7 era. But as a developer, man, it was just frustrating working with like a 10-year-old version of jQuery, and
right.
You know, getting Rich Text Editor set up was just a disaster, and all of those problems are just like just non-issues in Backdrop, and it's just a great, fun platform to be working on.
So, some advice maybe for somebody who's got a Drupal 7 site. They're kind of, and we think we've talked a lot about this before. When's the right time to go to Backdrop, or should you consider Backdrop versus Drupal 8? What's one piece of advice that you would give somebody who's considering making a move or needs to upgrade their platform? Whether they should go to Backdrop or not.
Well, the greatest aspect of Backdrop, in my opinion, is if you've got budgetary constraints, and maybe you've been seeing your, you know, Drupal maintenance has been an issue for you in the past. Drupal 8, we believe, will not lower the cost of owning a Drupal website. It'll probably get a lot more expensive, and the migration can be a really big hassle. And the concept of Backdrop fundamentally is, let's really try to reduce the amount of time and money that is spent maintaining websites, essentially. And we feel like moving from Drupal 7 to Backdrop is a much, much faster and easier process, because that was our goal from the outset, was to provide a sustainable future for Drupal 7 websites, like continuity. You didn't need to rewrite all of your custom code or modules, and you can just upgrade them, and that's a much faster process. So that doesn't mean that Drupal 8 isn't going to be successful. It's just that now in the world of Drupal, it's kind of been solidified that Drupal has an audience, and that's through the new tagline, creating ambitious digital experiences, which basically kind of puts Drupal in like the higher ends of quadrant as far as like sites that need a lot of functionality, but sites that also have a lot of budget. And Backdrop specifically targets itself towards this combination of sites that need a lot of functionality, maybe less so than a complex Drupal site, but have a lot less money to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're that combination of the simplicity kind of WordPress, but the power that you expect from, Drupal 7, which is really powerful. It's done all kinds of crazy websites. But instead of continuing to trend towards more abstraction and more complexity to handle, like, all of these use cases that just continue to contort, your Drupal site into doing all of these things, like, we're kind of backing away from that and really focusing on just, like, Backdrop is software for making websites, and just really focus on the website itself.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So, to move away from the tech talk for a little bit, if you woke up tomorrow and the internet had disappeared, so you now have all the time in the world to make improvements to your house, which I know you've done a ton of lately. So what would you do with your time? Besides make nothing but improvements to your house.
Oh, that was my answer, though.
Okay. You really enjoy that, and you're good at it. You've done some amazing stuff to your house.
Yeah, I've really started to enjoy working with my hands and building things. And it's really not that different from what I do online, is that I love to build. You know, I love to create things. And I've been doing a lot more work with my hands, making things with, you know, out of wood or just doing home improvement type work, you know, framing, adding walls and moving things around, even plumbing. Been doing a lot of plumbing electrical work. I don't know. If there were no internet, and let's just extend that to say, you know, there were no computers that, you know, that I could expend my creative energies on, I would just be making something else. I'm just a maker, and I love making things. And so without the internet, it would just turn to more physical things, I think. So I don't know what that would be entirely, other than home improvement stuff, but it would be, yeah, it would just be in the physical space.
Yeah, I gotta give you a lot of credit for going at it with the home improvement stuff. It terrifies me when you start getting into things that pipe water or have electricity running through them. I don't know how you feel so comfortable getting in there and doing it, but I'm very impressed by all those stories that you share and some of the videos and photos we've seen.
You know what is really funny about the physical home improvement type stuff is that I bought copies of the California codes, the plumbing code and the electrical code. And along with those purchases, if you purchase them from the official sources, it also gives you a membership to a group of basically professional plumbers or professional electricians. And you I haven't actually signed in, but my understanding is basically purchasing a copy of the code basically gives you not really permission, but it gives you access to talk with this other group of professionals, and then you basically get to debate about what the code should be. And the code is nothing but like the consensus of like thousands of plumbing professionals that have all gotten together and decided what the code should be. So they're actively like discussing and debating and deciding, like, you know, new products come on the market and they have to figure out how they fit into the official plumbing code. And it's kind of incredible because it's like the open source community.
I was just thinking that.
So I had never thought of there being like the same kind of consensus driven system applied to something like plumbing. It just hadn't occurred to me. I just thought that, like, I don't know, some lawyers were coming up with this stuff somewhere. But it actually turns out anybody can be a part of this community where you can decide the future of how plumbing works in America by being a member of this consortium. So it's really cool. I had no idea that that was a thing.
That's pretty crazy. As you're describing that, I'm thinking it's kind of like the hands-on version of should we put React in core?
Yeah, or any decision regarding Drupal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's a whole other path we're not going to go down on this episode, though. So we'll wrap it up by... I always wrap up the same way. If you could share some gratitude or thanks with somebody who gave you a push along the way when you needed it, or you saw an inspiring presentation, anybody come to mind?
Well, this seems really, I don't know, probably lots of people feel the same way, but some open source founders I just find to be really inspirational, mostly because of the way that they created something and then gave it to the world and kind of stepped back from that. Would probably be you know, the founders of the Apache project, which they created it, and most people, like, I mean, there is no Linus Torvalds of the Apache project. Like, people, everybody knows of Apache, and it's one of the most successful open source projects ever. But people can't tell you really who the founders were of the Apache project, because they basically came forward and just said, you know, here is our project, and they set up a project management committee, as we have done in the Backdrop world, and kind of distributed their authority to groups of people, like democratized the leadership of their projects. And the same thing with jQuery, even though people know John Resig is the original author of jQuery, did the same thing, that he basically, you know, started a foundation and gave the reins of the project over to the foundation and a set of other, you know, core maintainers. And I just find that to be like the just truest form of like open source gifting. Like, I really feel like these are people that tried to make something amazing, give it to the world, and then let it go. Like, it's not tied into their egos that they need to be the owner of this thing. It's really just like, you know, I'm doing this for the good of the internet or the good of the world, and I'm just, it doesn't matter if it's mine or not, it's everyone's, and I really love that.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. You can name a lot of the heads of these organizations, but yeah, Apache, I really like that, and I've heard you talk about the way that you structured Backdrop that in that same fashion, so that's really cool to hear that way.
Yeah, and I hope that eventually, you know, first of all, I hope that Backdrop is something that changes the world. That would be really amazing. And I also hope that our community grows so that we can pull in these people and, I won't always be, like, the Backdrop person. Like, mm-hmm. Hopefully it'll just kind of transition into, like, you know, we are a community and it doesn't really matter, like, you know, who our superstars are or anything like that. It's just about software, and what can we do together, and not so much about celebrities. Totally. So that's what I'm hoping for, and I hope that we can achieve that.
Awesome. Nate, thanks a lot for taking a few minutes. This has been great.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris.
Whether you're learning how to build sites with Drupal or diving into the code, there are community-powered camps, summits, sprints, and trainings happening all over the world. Find all of these and more at drupalcal.com. And of course, if you want to boost your Drupal chops from the comfort of your own home, point your browser to drupalize.me and stuff your brain full of carefully crafted videos and tutorials.